There are four bakers down the street. What makes yours so different? And Celia looks him in the eye and says, well, just try a bit. And I thought, oh, you naughty girl, Celia. You naughty girl. And he had a little munch of that cake and he thought, I bet more's to come. And he was right. Hello and welcome to the Danjo Film Show, episode 18. I hope you're all well and staying safe. As always, I'm joined by my hunky, macho, gorgeous assistant. He puts the diff in Cardiff. Please welcome Joe Richards.
Hunky and macho today. That's the denim shirt. That's the denim shirt I'm wearing. But thank you very much, Dan.
Can I just clarify? You're not wearing double denim, are you? Because then I have to go back on myself.
No, look, I'm wearing chinos. I'm wearing chinos.
That was just an excuse to see your body, to be honest.
No, it's just showing because double denim I did once before, and I wore a denim jacket and blue jeans, which wasn't a good look. And I remember walking down past Cardiff Castle. I walked past Rebs, you know, Rebs, like everyone knows Rebs. And like the bouncer guy was like, double denim. And like one of the women was like, laughed at me. And ever since, I've been like,
oh no.
Yeah.
Oh no. It is like in high school, isn't it? We're like, oh look, there's double denim boy. Let's chuck some things at him.
What are your views on double denim? Because I think we've had this conversation before.
So my better half and I went to watch Just Mercy again, which I love, so relevant right now. But Brie Larson wears triple denim in that film. She wears a denim shirt with a denim jacket and denim jeans, all the same colour. I was like, hold on now. I said, is this kind of fashion? Is this so bad it's kind of good? I'm a big believer. I think avoid it. Just be out of safety, you know. It's like, you know, like with the coronavirus right now, you know, don't go where crowded places just in case. I think you don't want to risk being called double denim in the middle of the street. But you know what? I think if they're different shades of blue. So I remember wearing like a light blue winter denim jacket back in the day, back when, you know, it was winter time. And I used to wear dark, like almost black jeans. But even then, you'll still get that one person who'd be like, nope, double denim.
That one person will come out of nowhere and call you out on double denim. You can go through life just wearing whatever the hell you want, wearing jumpers with three phrases on them and, you know, stripy T-shirts, and nobody will say a word. But then the day that you wear double denim, somebody will just come out of nowhere and call you out on it in front of all of your friends, and you can never live it down.
It's tragic, isn't it? But how have you been? Obviously, cinemas, I mean, I'm going to talk about it a bit in the news, but obviously cinemas are reopening at this point, although there are plenty of delays. But how are you and yourself? Are you keeping busy?
Yeah. I haven't been back to the cinema yet. I have been sort of trying to get back to a little bit of normality. Yesterday, I went out for a beer in a pub. I had a pint in a pub, and that was really lovely. I had a beef pie and mash and gravy as well, so a proper pub lunch. So yeah, just trying to get back to like normality a little bit, trying to see a few friends and stuff, because I'm going back to work full time next week. So I'm trying to see a number of people who I've not seen since lockdown. But yeah, very jealous of you being able to go to cinema. You've been a few times now, haven't you?
Yeah, it's good to be back. And I don't know about you, I struggle now to watch films at home. I really do. I think once you've had the big screen, it's tough to replicate that.
But yeah, you've been a busy boy as well. Every time I talk to you, you're like, you know, you're out and about. You've become a Bristol boy. You're like going over the bridge, left,
Bristol,
right, and centre.
Bristol. Yeah, love it. No, I think, you know, I've never really liked Bristol, to be honest with you. I'm going to come out and say it. It's no Cardiff. But I've seen a different side to it, you know. In the daytime, it's lovely. In the night, I'd be a bit scared. Shops there are brilliant. You know, I have been going, it is the nearest cinema to me, so I've got to make that trek. I think when you go to shopping and you go out, it does feel like nothing's happened. there are, like, you have security guards here and there who tongue you, like, the arrows, although nobody follows the arrows. I mean, come on. Yeah, I've become a little Bristol boy, going down to Weston, going down Clevedon, hey! So should we get onto the big news story of this week? Lots and lots to talk about. Our Instagram feed this week has just been bop, 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 so many posts coming up. And yeah, if you do want to follow us on Instagram, we are at DJ Film Show to get all the latest updates on this growing news story. So it obviously is coming to the end of July now, and studios are getting a bit worried. And when they do get worried, they are going to start delaying some of the big blockbusters that we were hoping to see in the summer. So we had Tenet, first off, Christopher Nolan's film, that was due to be released August 12th. That has now been pushed back. You've got Mulan, which is due the week later. That has been pushed back. You've also got films like A Quiet Place Part 2, which was due to be released at the start of September, which I know Joe was looking forward to a lot. And Top Gun, which is surprising, end of December. And they've now pushed that to next summer, I think for different reasons personally. But obviously so many delays, it seems to be just one after the other. What do you make of all of it, Joe? Is it made you, I know we've both been kind of a little bit worried to think that, you know, the first blockbuster we're not, you know, we're going to have might be like end of August at the very least. We might be waiting a long, long time. Do you think there's going to be further delays with other movies, or do you think we can still salvage 2020? Do you think we can still have some blockbusters this year?
I think a lot of the bigger films are going to be pushed back now till 2021. My last hopes, my last kind of remnants of hope, are kind of now shifted to Disney and Marvel. Obviously, we were supposed to get Black Widow back in May. And I think potentially, I think the last time I read that had been moved way back to like November, December. So I'm hoping that maybe we'll get at least like a Marvel movie by the end of the year. Otherwise, I don't have a great deal of faith in getting anything else out. It's really a whole mix of emotions, to be honest. I feel like we as a UK audience, European audiences, are getting penalised essentially because of America's handling of the COVID situation. And that's a big reason why Tenet has kind of had to be pushed back, and Mulan, because there's been another COVID spike in the States. So I feel frustrated that we are doing everything that we can. We have done everything that we can. We're finally in a good position where we can start going back to the cinemas, but we're not getting a chance to see those movies because America, under the reign of Donald Trump, isn't handling the situation well at all. And therefore, that's having a knock-on effect on us. It's having a knock-on effect on our industry because cinemas are essentially going to be reopening with nothing to show. It's a really tough one because I think everybody's looking at Tenet. Everybody's waiting to see what Christopher Nolan does with Tenet. And Christopher Nolan has been very much big on the cinematic experience in the past. He has been involved in creating technology to bring people in cinemas. So I don't think we're ever going to be in a position where Nolan's going to say, right, we'll just release Tenet onto streaming. I don't think we're ever going to get to that position because he's a filmmaker which doesn't want his films to be seen on the small screen at first. So in that instance, I think we are a little bit screwed, to be frank. I think Bond is the one kind of people are thinking about now. We were supposed to get that back in April, I think. I've got a funny feeling that will be postponed as well. I think that'll be the final nail in the coffin for the big blockbusters of this year. But what do you think? How are you feeling about it all?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Kind of predicting who's going to be next. It's like the weakest link, isn't it? Who's going to be voted off next? I think what I'll say is, I think Bill and Ted have done the best thing right now, and what they've announced is they're going to release it in cinemas and on VOD simultaneously. I think that's the best decision right now, because I think you can't really promise to keep it in cinemas like Nolan is doing, because I think it is at the detriment of cinemas, because they want to open. And if you're kind of saying to them, okay, we'll get it released, it's not down to you, Nolan, it's down to the studio. I'm sorry, like, I love Christopher Nolan. I love his passion for cinema, but it's not up to him, it's up to Warner Brothers. And I think if he's going to keep saying, oh yeah, we're going to try and release it, he's saying now he wants to get it into the UK before America, I don't know. I can't believe him at this point. But I think the best thing studios can do now is at least release it side by side to streaming and give audiences the choice, because I'm generally not saying this now because I'm scared. I am a bit scared of it all. But people want to go back to the cinema. My sister yesterday, she works in a pub. And I was out for drinks with some friends. She came home and she went, oh, I haven't been to cinema in like months. We should go. Any good films out? And I just got to say, well, no, there's not really. And people have an appetite for cinema. They want to go back. I, somebody who's been 3 times now, I genuinely feel it is safe. I'm not just saying that. And the staff are ready. They're so eager. They want to go back to work. And, you know, it sucks. We haven't got the big blockbusters, but I still think we can salvage this. I still think there are plenty of films, smaller movies, that want to be released in cinemas. And I think we have to push forward and keep going with it. And hopefully these big studios will look at that and go, okay, well, these smaller films are doing okay. Not say they're going to be do as well as last year, whatever. And I think that's going to encourage them to then say, okay, I don't know. I'm hopeful with Bond. In terms of Top Gun, though, I think Top Gun, it had a bit to do with that and a bit to do with the fact that it feels like more of a summer movie. And I'm perfectly happy with that movie next year.
I think it was interesting you did the Weakest Link analogy there, because I read an article from Robbie Collin, who's a great film journo. He writes for The Telegraph. He stands in for Commode on Wittertainment. And he actually made a comparison to a program which I'm sure you've seen, Dan, Golden Balls with Jasper Carrot.
Oh, split or steal.
Yes, exactly. And he made that comparison. And I really, he kind of summed up exactly how I felt. He's frustrated with the way that the industry are handling this, the way studios are handling it. He's basically compared it to that end choice. You can either split with somebody or both of you can steal and you both end up losing out. And we're kind of in that position with America at the moment. You can either say, well, no, we're going to wait until both can have it and then we both end up losing out. Or you can just say, no, you know, I'm gonna give it to the one kind of region. We actually did a poll as well on Twitter, and you can follow us on Twitter as well at DJ Film Show, because I thought it would be interesting to put it out to the people and see what they thought. So we asked our Twitter followers what they thought about it and whether or not they thought studios should can seriously consider releasing bigger films in the UK and European cinemas before releasing them in America. 71% of the vote said that they thought the film industry should start releasing these big films in the UK and European cinemas. So you can see the large majority of people, I think, are in the same agreement as us, because these are people's livelihoods on the line at the end of the day as well. You know, like you said, these staff want to get back to work. You know, we know plenty of people who work in these cinemas. We've you know, kind of developed friendships with some of these people, and they want to get back to work, and they're seriously worried that their livelihoods are going to be lost. I think it's a very frustrating position that we're in now, and I can't see America getting over this anytime soon, can you?
No, and I tell you what, I never thought a Golden Balls analogy could be so relatable right now. And I tell you what, if you ever have a spare afternoon, I think it's showing every day on Challenge. So just watch the episode, Split and Steal, that final bit. Oh, I remember one episode, a nun stole the whole jackpot. Pretty girl.
That's America
say
right
Hail
now.
Marys.
Yeah. America is the nun stealing the jackpot and not allowing
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
Very excited to talk about the first film today, which I watched at 10 o'clock this morning, which is The Kissing Booth 2, which is new to Netflix today. Sequel to The Kissing Booth, which was released a couple of years back on Netflix and was, I imagine, was quite popular, because I can't see why they would have made a sequel otherwise. Although Netflix recently released a list of their top 10 most successful films, and I couldn't see The Kissing Booth in there. So yeah, Kissing Booth 2, based on a series of books. I know, Dan, that you have not seen The Kissing Booth. So to just bring you up to speed, I'm going to go through quickly.
Okay, I'm ready. I'm ready. My brain is ready.
Right, it's brilliant, right? Okay, so I watched it a couple of days ago and I laughed so much. And it's the type of film which I miss watching with you in cinemas, because I just laugh so much at how cheesy and trashy it is. So The Kissing Booth 1 is basically about a young girl in school, in high school, and she's got a BFF. She's grown up with this guy called Lee, and her and him have like rules from their childhood. Rule number 18, you've always got to go dancing with your bestie. And rule number 9 is you can never date a bestie's relative. Now, this is a problem for Elle, the lead character, because she has had the biggest crush on Lee's older brother since she can remember. But who can blame her? Because the older brother, Noah, he is so dreamy. He gets into fights. He's a bit of a bad boy. He fights a lot of people and he rides around on a motorcycle. So who can really blame her, right? The film itself becomes about her building a relationship with the older brother and how she's worried that might affect her friendship with her best friend. There's a kissing booth. She kisses him at a kissing booth. And spoiler alert, if you don't want it spoiled for you right now, she ends up getting with Noah. Happy ending. Or is it? Noah, in the kissing booth too, is now in university. He's in Harvard. Because even though he's, fights a lot of people and he's a bit of an idiot,
he's an Albert Einstein, isn't he, really?
So yeah, he's now in Harvard. Elle is still in her senior year in high school. And she's trying to be mature about this situation. It's a long-distance relationship. She's trying to be an adult, a grown-up about the situation. So she's not going to message him. She's going to trust him to kind of go out and be, in his first year of university. But things start to take a turn for the worse when she goes to visit him in Harvard and he introduces her to his friends, one of which is a very attractive young woman who Elle starts to believe has feelings for her Noah.
Hello, hello, hello.
How are you?
So good.
Nice to see you.
So dashing. Oh, hello, gorgeous. It's so good to see you.
You're beautiful.
Thank you.
Come join us.
Thanks for answering my call.
So, where were you?
I actually have no excuse, but I'll make it up to you tonight on the dance floor. Oh my god. Wait, no, is this Elle?
Yeah.
I have heard so much about you. Seriously, my god, you're gorgeous. You're gorgeous. I love her already. Too bad this one here is so ugly though, isn't it? But he does do as he's told, so I keep him around.
I bet you do.
So Elle basically starts to think that Noah is maybe cheating on her with this newer character. And meanwhile, while she's back home and he's in Harvard, she starts to develop feelings for a guy called Marco, who's this new guy on the scene, who's very handsome, also very buff, and very talented dancer. And she starts to develop feelings for him. Meanwhile, she is very concerned because Noah wants her to go to Harvard, but she's always promised Lee, her best friend, that they would go to the same school together. So she's all torn up about that. Also, she can't afford to go to Harvard. So what does she do? What's the answer? How can she go to Harvard?
Prostitution.
No, she enters a dance competition for £50,000.
What? 50k? Who is she?
Yeah.
J-Lo.
Yeah. So, those dance machines in like Barry Island or whatever, Just Dance. She is a professional. She loves that machine. Her and Lee have basically always danced on it. So when she's like, oh, I need to go to Harvard, and she's like wondering how she can get there, she coincidentally, the answer falls in her lap. She finds a leaflet saying, you can enter this competition and the prize money is 50,000. So she enlists the help of Marco to this new dreamy guy on the scene, who's also great at this dance machine. She enlists the help of him. And yeah, it's very complicated. I know I've rattled on about the plot, but I think that's important because the film itself, like at the end, I think I watched it with my better half and we were like counting how many plot threads there were actually going on in the kissing booth too. And there's like too many to count, to be honest. There's so much going on in the sequel. It sort of explains why the film itself is 2 hours and 10 minutes. I can't get over that. I watched The Dark Knight yesterday because it's its 12th birthday today. It was released 12 years ago today. The Dark Knight is like literally 15 minutes longer than The Kissing Booth 2, which I never thought I'd be in the position of saying. I will say, like I said before, The Kissing Booth 1 and 2, they're trashy, they're very silly, they're very dumb. They feel like they are about 15 years at least behind the times, to be honest, in terms of their relationships. I mean, this Noah character, I mean, there's nothing to him, to be honest. I'm team Marco, I will say. Noah, you know, there's nothing to him. He's kind of, in the first film especially, walks around beating people up, and he's, like, really rude and just not really nice person. So, like, and he's quite controlling of her as well, especially in the second one when he's like, oh, you should definitely come to Harvard. He's, like, quite controlling and a bit of a prat, to be honest. So it feels like very kind of backward representation. It doesn't feel like it's made for today's audience. It does feel like it was made for an audience in the 90s, especially with the plot point of the dance competition. Because, I mean, I remember seeing an episode of Saved by the Bell, which was released in 1989, and there was the exact same storyline. But for all of its flaws, for all of the bad acting, the cheesy moments, which are there's so many to kind of choose from, I kind of like it for the fact that it is very trashy. I gotta say, I was watching it and I was so engrossed in the drama. I was so engrossed in the tea. I felt like Kermit in that meme where he's like drinking the tea and he's like, that ain't none of my business. I would be lying if I didn't say I was kind of wrapped up in the drama, wrapped up in the tea, and enjoyed it for what it was. It's nothing groundbreaking. It's way too long at 2 hours, 10 minutes. But if you're a fan of the books, and I imagine there are a lot of people who are fans of the books and fans of the first film, they'll watch this and they won't be disappointed. The drama has been upped by like 11. And I will say, I can't wait for The Kissing Booth 3.
Intercourse. Someone who has a car.
What's a car?
Stop moping. Try this. They're looking for writers
to be a rock critic.
I'm Johanna Morrigan. I have an interview for the job. Did you think my writing was good?
It's not really us.
Not cool.
Darling, rooms like that need girls like you.
Come on, let's go!
Good God, it's a child catcher.
Johanna Morrigan is dead. This is the legendary Dolly Wilde.
Last night, rock and roll meant nothing to me. By midnight, it was the most important thing in the world.
Darling, have you ever done an interview before?
I've never done anything before. These are the places you come where you can dance and scream and be with your own kind, where everything is possible.
This is Dolly Wilde. She's trouble.
Yes, I am trouble.
The thing about crossing over to the dark side is that once you're there, it doesn't feel dark at all.
My question to you, Johanna, is when did you lose your mind?
What do you do when you build yourself, only to realise you built yourself with the wrong things? You rip it up and start again.
This, we would like to run in the next issue.
Thank you. Thank you very much, ma'am.
Are you, in fact, pretending to be Elvis right now?
Moving on now to How to Build a Girl, which has just come on Amazon Prime. And it stars Beanie Feldstein, who is the sister of Jonah Hill. Am I correct with that?
Yes, you are.
Okay,
yeah.
I thought so. I was like, oh. It's about a 16-year-old teenager living in 1993 in Wolverhampton. Now, Wolverhampton is a place close to my heart because I was actually born in Dudley in the West Midlands, which is right near Wolverhampton. And we have friends, family friends who live in Wolverhampton, who used to go watch Wolverhampton games at the football. So I was really intrigued, firstly, this was filmed there because from the poster, it doesn't look like it's set in the UK. It looks like it's more New York City. And it's about her as a teenager. She's in a working class family on a council estate in Wolverhampton. And she grows up. She looks up to people like Karl Marx. Sigmund Freud, Sylvia Plath, you know, all the usual crushes that a teenage girl would have. She wants to become a really popular writer. She's been writing in class, but she becomes very conflicted about kind of where her life is going. She wants to be a music journalist, but she just doesn't quite have the confidence and is quite bullied in school. That all changes when she basically goes to London, the big city, and decides to be a rock journalist who goes to different rock bands and writes about them in the headlines, in their newspaper. Like I said before, this is filmed in Wolverhampton. You couldn't tell at first, to be honest with you, because I think although most of the cast do a pretty good job with the Wolverhampton accent, Paddy Considine, he does a really good job with, "You're right, bub," and all those expressions that you hear from Wolverhampton. And then you have Beanie Feldstein, who I'm kind of confused why she did this project to begin with. We saw her in Booksmart last year, really talented actress, very sparky, very charismatic, and can really light up a scene. And she does so here. I've got to point out, I think she delivers a really good performance here. You know, she really does light the screen. I think it's a perfect role for her. She plays it very well. She played a similar character in Booksmart. And the only issue is that she can't do a Wolverhampton accent to save her life. And I have seen other critics being really kind to her and saying, yeah, she did a really good job. And I was watching a different movie, but I understand she's from America. I understand that it's a very hard accent, but I don't know whether they hired anyone to work with her with the accent. And if they did, I think I blame them. And if they didn't, I think she should have, because I can think of so many other British actresses that would have done a far better job with the accent. And you're probably thinking, Dan, you're being really hard, but it was really distracting for me because I think she does do a good performance, but her accent was just really frustrating for me because it's just like, you know, are you trying? Are you not trying? I didn't even know at points. And I think there are moments she does kind of have it and then it goes off into like a London-y accent like this. And it's just, oh, I don't know. I find that really frustrating all the way through. And I'm surprised it's not being picked up on as much as it should. Before watching this film, I looked at some of the reviews. It's doing really, really well with the critics, which I'm surprised by, because I do think this is a very aimless, very predictable coming-of-age story. I feel like I've seen this film done loads of times before. But what I did like about it is the family dynamic, is the family who are living in this council estate. Reminded me a lot of Fighting With My Family from last year.
Yeah, yeah.
It has that feel to it. And Paddy Considine is great. The family, Sarah Soleimani plays the mother who's just had twins and she's just tired all the time. Those bits I really enjoyed. And I think I would have just loved it to be a story about a young girl living in a council estate who wants to make it big, right? What I struggle with is this whole kind of rock music element to it, that we're supposed to believe that she loves rock music when she doesn't at all. Like I said, her room is filled with Karl Marx. Her room is filled with Sylvia Plath. Her room is filled with, you know, all these writers and political activists. And you're like, but she doesn't like music. She doesn't like rock music. So when they kind of push in that direction of her going to a newspaper and she has to go into all these different bands, I was a bit like, this is strange to me. This feels very, very forced. I would have liked it maybe if she had hoped to be like a novelist or someone who writes about Karl Marx and all these other people that she looks up to. They're very much, I don't know why they were put in the film. And I do feel like with these stories, there is a bit of political peddling at the background with the studio and the production around it. So yeah, I found this film very strange. I just thought it was kind of very bland at times. I thought there's some good performances here. I think Beanie Feldstein does a good job overall. But yeah, very, very strange this one. I didn't know how to quite feel about it. Very conflicted film, very aimless I found it. And I've got to say, I'm not on with the critics with this one. I think, I don't know what they ate before this, but yeah, not for me. But what did you think?
I'm with you to a degree. First thing I want to pick up on, I think Beanie Feldstein, absolutely terrific. I thought she was the best thing about the film. And her accent, I thought she did a good job. I gotta side with those other critics that you were saying about there. You know, I thought she did a considering.
Do you mean because she's American? Because you must have noticed compared to Paddy and the other actors, where, like, for example, the teacher in the movie, they were doing really good Wolverhampton accents. Was it in a sense that you thought, oh, I'm going to give her slack because she's American?
Yes, I think in the sense that she is an American actress, doing her best not to just do a British accent, but to do a Wolverhampton accent. It's a tough one to nail. And I thought she gave give it a good shot. I appreciated the fact that she at least tried and she didn't come over and go, oh, no, I'm just going to, like, literally do a generic British accent. So, you're right. Like, it's not perfect and maybe it's not as good as the other performers in the film. But she gave her a shot. And I think considering, you know, her American background, I thought she did do a good job. And away from the accent, I think she in general is a great actress in anything that she's in. And I thought she was terrific in this. I thought she was really good. And if anything, she was sort of the best thing about it for me, because otherwise I am completely on the same page as you. And I think the film overall is a mess. I think it's awkward. I think it is aimless. It's like as aimless and awkward as the central character is in the film. And I'm not sure if maybe that's the point. The fact that, you know, she's a 16-year-old girl without any kind of real direction. But even though the character may have no real direction, it doesn't mean that your film shouldn't have a direction. And I just kind of kept waiting for it to decide what it wanted to be. So you've got stuff with her family, which I agree with you again, it is the best part of the movie. Then you've got the stuff with the music journal side of it. And then she meets Alfie Allen, Lily Allen's brother, who I thought was going to be really central to the film. But then they have a couple of scenes together, and then he disappears for like another 20, 30 minutes. So I was really confused, and I just, the whole time I was sat there just wanting it to make up its mind, decide what it kind of wanted to do, and just maybe settle down a bit and get into a good rhythm. But every time it started to get to a good place, it felt like it just went completely the other way. And I get it. It says at the beginning it's based on a true-ish story. This is the issue you have sometimes. Obviously, this is based on a book by Caitlin Moran. When you have situations like this, sometimes I think writers get too bogged down in the truth of the subject matter to the point where they forget to make it really entertaining or structurally sound. So I feel like the writing in this instance is a case of going, well, that didn't happen, so therefore, you know, I can't put that in the movie. And I was really disappointed by this because I have seen, if you've got a special bond with Wolverhampton, Dan, then you need, if you haven't already, you need to go and watch Caitlin Moran's TV show called Raised by Wolves. It was on Channel 4. And that is pretty much all about a family, a poor working class family in Wolverhampton. And it's all about the family dynamic. And it was brilliant because it was focused on the family and it was funny. And the relationships between the characters were real but hilarious. And I think having watched the two seasons of that and knowing how funny Caitlin Moran can be, I was disappointed that this didn't kind of live up to that. And I think if it had been a story first and foremost about the family, it would have maybe had a bit more heart to it. And maybe I would have enjoyed it a bit more. But as it stands, you know, it's got great performances. It made me laugh a couple of times. I think there are one or two funny sequences in there. But otherwise, yeah, real disappointment. And I'm surprised that a lot of critics are praising it, to be honest, because it felt like a bit of a mess to me.
My dearest Sarah, I'm sorry we haven't spoken for so long.
Sarah, it's Isabella. I'm outside our bakery, waiting for you.
Perhaps we could meet up and discuss your brilliant bakery. It's time we spoke again. All my love, Mum.
Mimi Karachi?
Yes.
You know this girl?
She's my best friend's daughter.
And where's your friend?
What the hell are you gonna do?
There is somebody I could still try.
I didn't expect you to have quite so much. Please just tell me where we're going.
Isabella.
Mum would have wanted us to open this bakery, so that is what we're going to do. You can definitely see its potential.
What? There's a crack den?
What's that smell?
Cat's piss.
Croissants, fresh from the oven.
I'm here about the baking job.
It's a rose macaron filled with rose petal and lychee crémeux and fresh raspberries.
The batter's undermixed.
Sorry?
Not by much, but it could do with a few more folds.
There are four other bakers. What makes you so special?
Why don't you try one? Tell me.
Good luck.
Here we go. Wow, crowds. This city is home to people from all over the place. We make our bakery something to remind them of home.
You were her best friend. If anyone can put her spirit into this, it's you. So, are you going to join me or what?
Love, Sarah. Would you like to come in for a coffee?
I might be up all night.
Lucky me.
We're joined now by director of Love, Sarah, filmmaker Eliza Schroeder. Eliza, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's our pleasure. I'm so excited to talk about this film because I found it such a sweet, charming, uplifting British film. A film we really need right now, a film to kind of lift everyone's spirits at this really kind of strange time. So for those who haven't yet gone out and seen it at the cinema, what can you tell us about the movie?
Oh, it's a film about three women from different generations who jointly open a bakery in London's Notting Hill. And the baker who was supposed to open the bakery, spoiler alert, has an accident, so she can no longer open that bakery. So these three women join forces to open this place on her behalf.
And as Dan said, he actually got to see it in the cinema. I think it was one of his first cinema trips in like 100 and or so days, however long it had been. Can you tell us a little bit about Love, Sarah going straight into cinemas? Was there a conversation about it going on to streaming at any point? Or was it always your intention to have it open up cinemas when they were back open?
We were always quite keen on having it. Of course, I was always very keen to have it in cinemas as its director. And we very much filmed it to be released on the big screen. And I think we, you know, the DOP and I have always been wanting to create images that would sort of indulge people on the big screen. So we were very delighted to hear that our distributors were very much on board with trying to take the risk and despite the pandemic, trying to find a window where we can actually release on the big screen.
Yeah, and it was wonderful to watch it on the big screen again. And I felt so much better going out with the film than I came walking in, which I think is such a compliment to you and the film. The film, like you said, is about three women who open a bakery. There are a lot of delicious cakes and delicacies from all around the world featured in the movie. Have you always had a passion and a love for baking?
Unfortunately, yes. I like cakes way too much. And so, you know, I not only do I like baking with my children or without and with the family, but also do I really love eating cakes. So it was always, I was very happy when I sort of heard that this film is actually going to happen. And I knew that I would be surrounded by lots of delicious cakes on set.
Very jealous of you there, for sure. But as Dan said as well, it's a very female-led project. It's a female-driven story with you know, three generations of women. Is that something important to you, to get, you know, gender politics and things are very current at the moment, a current topic, especially in the film industry. Is it important to you to tell these female-led stories on the big screen?
Yes, I think it's very important. I mean, I'm not so much a feminist, to be very honest with you, but I do, of course, I love my job, and I love that it's possible for women today to actually, you know, to do these jobs and to make that happen. And why I wanted to tell a story about women from different generations is because I come from a very big family. I have five siblings and two older brothers, but I also have three sisters. But it's really different women from different generations in my own family, in my surrounding, that have inspired me for these different characters. And I thought it's quite interesting to see what you can perhaps learn from different generations. And sometimes you can learn more from the younger ones than the older ones, or the other way around. So that very much inspired me to hopefully get people to go and watch it and see whether they can somehow find parts of themselves in one of these female characters.
And the film stars Celia Imrie, who is just a British icon. What was it like working with her? And what was it like directing with her?
Oh, it was, when I heard the news that she was on board, I was really thrilled because I have always admired her work. I think she's a fantastic actress. And then she came on set and she was just really wonderful. She was very respectful of myself and of my job. And at the same time, I could learn so much from her being a first time feature film director. It was really, you know, of course I was nervous about would she respect me, would she be ready to listen to my instructions, so to speak. And she was really a good sport, and I could not only learn a lot from her, but also these three lead women, they were just connecting instantly. And that was really, I think, especially looking back, I'm thinking, oh my God, will I ever be that lucky again to actually work with such a strong team? You know, there was never a bad day, or there was never a bad spirit, and that was really, I have to say, it was a beautiful experience.
And what's next for you then? Obviously, you seem to be on holiday right now. You're taking a little bit of a break. But what's next for you? What projects do you have in the pipeline at the moment?
I have a couple of projects. One is a drama with my producer Rashida Shah again, who was such a great collaborator and you know, really a wonderful partner in crime. And I'd love to work with my DOP Aaron Reed again. He was equally fantastic. So that's a drama that she brought to me, which I think can be fantastic. I'm not allowed to say much yet, but it's something again that would be very sort of female driven. And the other thing that I've always wanted to do is direct a thriller. So I have a thriller project that I would like to get off the ground, but again, it's quite early stages.
Brilliant, exciting stuff. Well, Elijah Schroeder, thank you so much for doing this. The film is really wonderful. Love, Sarah is in UK cinemas now. I recommend everyone, as long as it's safe to do so, go out into the cinemas and watch it. It's fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
And that was our interview there with Elijah Schroeder from sunny Spain. What a beautiful backdrop she's got there.
I know, when we arranged the interview for today, I did not realise that she was actually on holiday. I felt awful when she came on the Zoom call and she had this lovely, beautiful backdrop of like a villa in Spain. So yeah, I felt awful, but you know, very appreciative of her time. She was great. And yeah, I'm intrigued to hear what you thought about the film itself, Dan.
So like Eliza spoke about, this is Love, Sarah. It stars Celia Imrie, Rupert Penry-Jones, Shelley Conn, big British casting, and obviously, like she spoke about, female-led British film. It is, like I said, one of the first films back in cinemas. It was supposed to be released back in April, and it got delayed. And it really is such a sweet, charming, very delightful movie, in the same vein of Finding Your Feet and, of course, Fisherman's Friends. I did think they were maybe going to call this kind of Cake Buddies or something like that, but there we are. And yeah, I'm a sucker for these types of films. I really, really am. I think these are perfect Sunday afternoon, at home with your nan, have a cup of tea and a biscuit. Those types of movies that are really kind of, they're not groundbreaking. They're not supposed to be preachy. They are simply there to make you feel good and make you warm inside. And I definitely feel like I left the cinema in a much better mood than I went into it. And, you know, from the get-go, the cast are brilliant. They have such good chemistry. Celia Imrie is a British icon. She is such a pro at this point. She just has such a warmth on screen. And yeah, she was great. And so were all the girls. And then about halfway through, you know, they've opened this bakery. They're selling these kind of Michelin-starred cakes. They find that the customers aren't coming into the shop and they're losing money. Halfway through the film, the movie goes in a really strange direction, where they decide, Celia Imrie decides and goes to them and says, okay, in order to get the customers in, we've got to be thinking now. London is very multicultural, which is very true. People come from all parts of the world to live in London. How about I'm going to go out and go up to strangers and say where they're from and kind of what delicacies they want to eat from back home that maybe they aren't available in London, which is a great idea and great intentions. But what he does is there's a whole sequence where Celia Imrie goes to people in the street and goes, where are you from? And they go, sorry? She goes, no, where are you really from? Not from London, where are you from? And they go, oh, I'm from China. Oh, and what do you like to eat in China? And they go, oh, I like this cake. Right, we're going to make that cake. And they go back and make the cake then. And I think it has the best of intentions, but in doing so, there are lots of political lines here and there that I didn't think were needed. Listen, I live politics in films, the next is the next guy. But this is not a film that needs to be political at all. It's not a film that has to comment on multiculturalism or the government or immigration. It didn't need to, but I understand that. I think it went in with the best of intentions. But for me, that was the only bit of the film that was a bit like, oh, you know, it's got good ideas, but the execution, it kind of falls flat. Saying that, I think the film itself, like I said, it's really sweet. It's really charming. There are romance here and there. Cillian Murray falls in love with an older neighbour. That's really cute as well. And I think, you know, when you look at the cinemas now, and we have a lot of older films being released, and we have films like Blackwater, which is about crocodiles. I think this is the kind of the best film out at the moment. Really, really is. And it came out about 2 weeks ago, but it still is in cinemas. So people are going out to watch it. And yeah, I mean, it's out in cinemas at the minute. It's going to be out in digital in September. I would recommend people watch it. Eliza Schroeder was a lovely, lovely woman. And I think this is kind of her first directorial debut in terms of a feature film. And I got to say, behind the camera, she is excellent. The cinematography is beautiful. How she kind of lights up Notting Hill and makes it somewhere that you would want to go and visit. Like I said, it's a really sweet, charming, uplifting British film. It's funny at points, it's dramatic at points, and it bounces really nicely. A little bit political at places, but you know what? Aside from that, I really enjoyed it. I think Eliza should be very, very proud, and all the team should be proud of what they did. And she mentioned in the interview there that the cast had so much fun. And they were pretty professional. And you can tell they had an absolute ball making this. And I wish I was there as well. So yeah, really enjoyed it. Love Sarah. It's in UK cinemas now and it's on digital in September.
Did it make you hungry?
Oh, I was salivating a little bit. There's some of the delicacies. Oh boy. And there was actually a scene where the older neighbour comes in and goes, there are 4 bakers down the street. What makes you so different? And Celia looks him in the eye and says, well, just try a bit. And I thought, oh, you naughty girl, Celia. You naughty girl. And he had a little munch of that cake and he thought, I bet more's to come. And he was right.
Well, no, I definitely have to watch it. I definitely have to go watch it. Oh,
definitely. Yeah, definitely go and watch it. And that's all we've got time for on today's show. Like I said, big thanks to Eliza Schroeder, our guest on today's show. Please get in touch with us on social media. We're the Dan and Joe Film Show on Facebook. You can also find us on Twitter at DJ Film Show and on Instagram as well. And yeah, don't forget to listen to all our past episodes on Mixcloud, Spotify, Apple, iTunes. We're on all our streaming platforms. And a big thanks as well to our last episode. Got a lot of listeners that one. So thank you so much for everyone that listened to that. And let's keep it going. And yeah, thank you again for watching. Thank you, Joe, as always. Lovely to see your handsome face.
Thank you, Dan. And yes, cinemas in Wales should be open next week. So next week, brother, me and you, cinema date for sure.
Oh, it's going to be so good. Oh, I'm getting a bit nervous just thinking about it. So fingers crossed of that. And yeah, thank you again for watching and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.